As little girls and boys, we look up at the glowing angel that gave us life with love and adoration. But for too many, this is not a happy reality. For many, the woman holding us is a true monster. These are their nightmares. Delve deep as we unravel the turbulent bonds between mother and child. You are listening to Monsters and Mothers with your host, Betty Wild.
Jenny sat in the bathroom with her dead sister in her arms, her heart beating with fear. She wondered how long before the abuse her sister endured would turn to her. Why didn't she fight harder? Why didn't she run? Why did she stand by and watch her sister be murdered? Forever and a day, the little girl spent watching her sister be tortured by a woman their parents left them with. The woman she was told to call Mom. A small breeze came through the window, and Jenny closed her eyes. She remembered the day this all began. Her parents, Lester and Betty, were having another one of their fights, and their mom, finally tired of the abuse, up and left in the middle of the night, taking with her both of her daughters, Sylvia and Jenny. Sylvia was the oldest, and even though life had been unpredictable in their home, Sylvia couldn't help but look back at the house that they were running from. She desperately wanted to run back to her father, who even through the drunken episodes was still a good father. But she knew she couldn't leave her little sister who needed her. Jenny wore braces on her legs due to polio as a young child, and she knew she had to be there for her, especially with her mother always spinning out of control. Even though something deep inside her was telling her to stay, she disappeared into the night with her sister and mother. It wasn't too long before her mother ran out of money and the girls were hungry. Betty's dreams of starting over didn't match the money in her pocket. After the hunger pains began to kick in, Betty knew she had to do something. She told the girls to stand outside of the grocery store while she went inside and stole them some food. Sylvia could see through the glass windows, her mother trying her hardest to be undetected. She couldn't help but play nervously with Jenny's hair as she stood outside in the sunshine of Indiana. Startled, suddenly, she jumped and pulled Jenny back. Two officers were dragging her mother handcuffed out of the front door. Sylvia hid with Jenny to avoid going to jail with their mother. Darlene and Paula were locals that often hung out at the grocery store there in Indiana. It was Darlene that noticed the girls first. She had a knack for finding and taking in strays. She nudged Paula before they walked over to talk to the girls. It became obvious to them that the two girls had nowhere to go. And it didn't take much convincing before they talked them into coming home with them. Darlene was the sweetest of the two and asked a lot of questions. Paula was taken in with their story and asked Jenny flat out, "What's up with your legs? Why do you have braces?" Jenny told her about the polio that she never recovered from. Paula was amused by their story and said she thought they could definitely be friends. They were about the same age. "Come on, follow me. I'll ask my mother if you can spend the night." Sylvia, feeling uncertain, knew other options didn't really exist. So they followed along like puppies to meet the woman that would change their lives forever. Gert, short for Gertrude, lie in her bed like a monster moving around in the sheets. Paula shouted out to her mother, asking if they could stay, and rushing out in full force their entire story of how they escaped from an abusive home and was left alone after their mother was arrested for shoplifting. Sylvia, immediately uncomfortable and somewhat reluctant, especially after seeing the condition of Paula's home. It had a foul smell, and the walls were very dirty. Gert crawled out of the bed, smelling of cigarettes, and met the girls with a plastered grin on her face. "You lovely girls are welcome to stay the night. And don't you worry. We will take good care of you. And in the morning, we will find out where your mother has gotten to. Don't you worry about a thing." She rustled Jenny's hair and walked right by. In the morning, there was a loud banging at the door. Gert was ready to rip the head off of anyone who dared wake her up and cause such a commotion. Half expecting to see the police, she saw a man standing there with Darlene. It was the girl's father, Lester. He had a speech all prepared and not in the direction the girls anticipated. Right out of the gate, Lester apologized for the inconvenience and thanked Gert for letting the girls stay the night. He said he no longer had a place for them to live, and that the wife and him were offered work in a carnival, and there was no room for the girls where they were going, and he asked if she didn't mind watching the girls for a while. Gert stood there leaning against the door with a cigarette in her hand, listening to the man babble on. Sylvia and Jenny ran to the door and hugged their father. Lester told Gert that he would pay her $20 a week if she would take the girls in. Sylvia couldn't believe what she was hearing. He hadn't even come into the house. He hadn't even seen that the house was a house of horrors with piles of messes everywhere and that there was no room for them to even sleep. Gert didn't take too long to calculate that $20 every week would pay for her cigarettes and then some, so she quickly perked up and acted like Mother of the Year. "Of course I'll help. I will take good care of you darlings. With so many kids around, what's a couple of more?" And just like that, Sylvia and Jenny were abandoned. Paula stood behind her mother, listening in, but instead of being excited, wasn't sure if her decision to bring home the girls was about to bite her in the ass. The house rumbled and shook with children bursting out of each room. No one cared about the mess, each contributing to the layers that built the Banaszewski house. Gert's house had been a local hotspot for teenagers since Gert let them smoke, listen to music, and lay around the house without supervision. It was only a few days before Sylvia and Jenny joined the house that Gert's oldest daughter, Paula, caused an incident due to her gaining attention from the older boys around town. Gert walked in on Paula, being mounted by an older boy that worked at the grocery store. She pulled Paula into the living room by her hair, kicking and screaming, and calling her a sinner and a whore. Gert screamed at the boy, who was now white as a ghost, and by now had pissed himself. "Don't you ever let me catch you around here again, you piece of shit. Get out before I do something I'll regret." As she chased the boy out of the house, she caught her reflection in the mirror that hung just next to her crucifix. In the mirror, she could see her hair was falling out, and her eyes were now nightmarishly sunken in. Being a mother to worthless kids had stolen her beauty. From that moment on, Gert had all the doors removed inside of the house in order to prevent secrecy and sinning from going on under her roof. And when that didn't work, she forced the scripture down their throats. But Gert would lose interest the way she lost interest in everything else she did. Her youngest mistake, Dennis Jr., whose father never did marry Gert, but she didn't let anyone know that her son was a bastard, so she took his name just to keep all judging eyes off of her. But everyone in the neighborhood knew the truth. No one, though, would dare confront Gert about her behavior toward the kids, either because they were scared of her and her temper, but they did pity her and appreciate all the things that she did for them. Either way, Gert hated them for knowing her shame. Back when Gertrude was born, the world was falling apart. The Wall Street Stock Exchange had crashed, and the world was plunging into the Great Depression. People were losing their homes, their businesses, and their lives. The nation was on the verge of a collapse. It was during this time that the Van Fossen family had 6 children, with Gertie being the 3rd child. She was born to Polish immigrants, and even though there were 6 children, Gertie was her father's favorite. It was said that at first it was tolerable that she got all the attention. But as time went on, it would be Gertrude's mother that quickly put a stop to the bond being formed between father and daughter. And so began the storybook tragedy of a mother jealous of her own daughter. Gert was despised from her birth. Her mother couldn't stand to look at her. She hated the way her father held her, sang to her, looked at her, things he would never even do for her. The long outings and the attention being poured on by her father was punished when her dad went to work. Her mother ignored her and the more abuse she received from her mother, the more her siblings would join in and isolate her as well. This made her cling to her father desperately. When the mother's efforts to separate them were only met with more affection from the father, she had turned all the children against Gertie. As Gertie got older, she was bullied in school by friends and even by her own siblings. She was now 10 years old and still not reading well. Why should she be? Her mother took no interest in her education. The more time went on, Gertie knew she would only be getting love from her father when he was home, whenever that was. He drank when he could afford it and made time for her whenever he had the chance. After dinner one night, he told all the other kids to leave the room so that he could spend time with Gertie and go over her reading. Gertie enjoyed making her father smile, and for a brief moment in her life, she felt loved. He danced with her and applauded her efforts. Her heart was filled. While he was dancing and spinning around, her father collapsed, falling to the ground, confused at what she was seeing. Gertie ran to her father's side and screamed. Her mother and siblings piled in, and she was instantly met with accusations from her mother. "What have you done?" Gertie asked if she should call the doctor, and the mother ignored her, and then told her, "We don't have money for a doctor." So her father was left there to die. From that moment on, her place in the house wasn't even fit for a dog. If she cried, she was beat. If something was broken, it was her fault. If she caused any trouble at all, she was the reason. The bullying would continue this way for many years to come. In school, she didn't even bother to make friends with girls her age. She was the outcast and would quickly learn that the rumors being spread about her were actually bringing her attention that she craved. But it was mostly from the older boys. This didn't bother her, because up until now, the only real love that was in her life was her father. So in some way, getting the attention from men really made her feel wanted and loved. She would let them do whatever they wanted to her, and by the age of 16, she had built quite the reputation. She dropped out of school and left home forever. Almost as soon as she left, she would marry John Banaszewski, an 18-year-old police officer who her mother strongly disapproved of. Due to John being an officer, he was given a lot of freedom with the town, and they were able to buy a house through the local bank. Unfamiliar with how to be a wife and take care of her husband, since her own mother never even taught her how to cook, Gert would soon become John's biggest regret. He thought she would become submissive and obedient, but what he got was quite the opposite. She began to nag him and order him to keep his mess clean, and would make a fuss about how he spent his money or how he spent his time hanging out with the fellas. The sex became a disappointment and almost non-existent. Mostly, this was the only reason that he even married her in the first place. She would barely move during sex, so he took to being violent with her until she became pregnant. And eventually, that's all Gert was, a baby maker. They had 4 kids, and she was good at her role as a mother. The house was clean, and the food even started to taste better. Still, she had no female friends to confide in. But things for the moment were peaceful in their home. It wasn't perfect, but it was peaceful. But over time, John resented the kids and her attention towards them, and it started with a few slaps here and there till the beatings on Gert were a regular thing. She became his punching bag. It was during this time that she suffered serious injuries to the head, which left her disoriented for days. Gert stopped going out, even to the grocery store. She didn't want anyone to see her bruises. Her first experience at makeup was learning how to cover up her black eyes and swollen lips. She had overheard rumors of women just getting divorced from situations like hers, and up until this point, she believed she was bound to her marriage, and she never before knew that this was something she could do. It gave her power, and the next time John raised his hand to her, she left him and got full custody of the kids, as well as a child support check. Then Eddie came along, who she married only a few months later. Eddie was unemployed, and he pretty much married Gert because she came with that check from her ex. Eddie drank away any money he earned before Gert could even see it. He really didn't enjoy having a mess of kids that were leeching on his time with their mom. One time, Eddie hit the kids, and he found himself on the street. Gert would not stand for her kids to be abused. It would also be eventually why Eddie left, and as soon as he got a full-time job, he divorced her. Their relationship only lasted 1 year from start to finish. At the time, she didn't mind. She still had child support and didn't really need a man. But as the seasons changed and spring came, Gert was lonely once again, and on one outing bumped into her ex-husband, John. The two rekindled, and for the moment, the kids were happy to have their father home. Gert even got pregnant again, but lost her child very late in the pregnancy. This would be her darker days. She couldn't recover from her miscarriage and stopped taking care of everyone, her children, her husband, even herself. Just when John thought he couldn't take it anymore, Gert was pregnant again and back to her ways of taking care of him and the kids. They would stay married for 7 years this time. After every miscarriage, she would fall into her slumps. The second marriage produced 2 kids, but it was just too much for John, so he filed for divorce and left her with all 6 kids. At 37 years old, Gertrude was an unstable single mother of 6 children, with no income beyond what she got from her ex in child support, and that had stopped coming in regularly. A few random jobs watching kids and doing the ironing for neighbors wasn't enough to feed the lot of kids. On the verge of being evicted, Gertrude met Dennis, who was already married at the time when she met him. Gertrude was also 10 years older than Dennis, but he didn't mind one bit. He was hooked on her. Gertrude pleased him in ways no other woman could. Gertrude saw Dennis as her last hope and used her age and sexual power over him to gain a house for herself and her kids. She rewarded him with sexual favors till it was soon her moving in with her clan and his wife moving out. Dennis was a drunk and didn't have much going for him, and the hold that Gert had on him seemed to be working, and he took on the financial burdens without a complaint. He had a lovely home on East New York Street, but that didn't last long. It soon took on the appearance of a run-down zoo. Filth crept and crawled and even stuck to the walls. Gert refused to clean up after herself and her heathens, and Dennis quietly sat back and watched in horror. But the sexual hold that Gert had on him, it made it too difficult to escape. When Dennis looked at his home, all he saw turned his stomach. On one of his drunken nights, Dennis passed out, willing himself to be rid of Gert for good this time. But when he woke up, what he saw made him rub his eyes to see if what he was seeing was actually real. Was he dead? Did he awake in another man's body? The mess that he half expected to have to crawl over and out of, and the piles of dirty diapers and the bottles, the newspapers, all of it was gone. The floor was cleaned. The walls were cleaned. The smell of piss no longer permeated the air like a thick cloud. He walked into the kitchen, and there stood Gert, not in a crusty gown that stuck to her on most days. No. There, in a pretty little dress and her hair done so that it was soft and silky, not greased and matted, was Gertie. Gertie's skin glowed, and she didn't look sallow and sunken and tired. She resembled the woman he met, and the kids. The kids were all seated at the table, and every one of them cleaned and clothed like they were ready for church. He could smell something baking in the oven, and before he could even speak, Gert pulled him closer and blew into his ear, tempting him once again. "I'm sorry, darling. I haven't been treating you well. Can you forgive me?" Before he could even mutter a word, Gert lured him into their bedroom, and his plan for freedom began fading with every step he took. Gert sprawled herself out onto the bed, her body now glistening on top of clean sheets. Dennis buckled. She whispered, "Do you forgive me?" He said, "Well, yeah, you look amazing. This house looks amazing." "You know, Dennis, I was thinking maybe we could make it official." His smile dropped. "What?" "Yeah, I want to make it official." He said his divorce wasn't final and it would take money for that to happen.
Then, with horror, he watched Gertrude take her hand and caress her stomach. His face grew pale. "Tell me there ain't no baby in there, Gert."
His original fear of getting her hooks into him like she did all the other men was more than he could stand. Gert suddenly felt his fist meet her cheek, and at first she grinned and looked up at him. She was no stranger to a man picking up his hands to her. But before she knew it, Dennis started wailing on her and punching her in the stomach repeatedly. "I don't want a baby," he screamed, as he kicked her in the stomach while she screamed back at him not to hurt the baby. When he was done, Gert crawled into the bathroom and bled herself on the toilet. She had lost her child. Gert felt a darkness come over her that stained her soul. Her ex had beat her almost to the point of death, and now this man was doing the same. Dennis fell asleep on their bed next to her. He was still unable to leave her, and it was for some time that he would stay with Gert. She kept the house clean, and he had a hot meal on his plate every night. But soon, Gert would be pregnant again, and this time she waited before telling him. But when Gert brought that child home from the hospital, Dennis was gone. He knew that that bump under her dress was a sign of what was to come, and he wanted no part of it. Humiliated, and now with 7 kids, Gert had to carry on alone with no help. The neighborhood of women took pity on her and gave her odd jobs to make ends meet for a while. And Gert was getting the help she needed. But as the days waned on and her heart and soul grew darker, all the loveliness the men in her life were drawn to was nothing but a memory. Lester Likens would be the call that she answered as an attempt to get her out of her financial situation.
But a month had passed since she had taken in the Likens girls,
and no checks had come to pay for their boarding. Frustrated and broke, Gert spent her last $3 on booze. When the girls returned home from school, Gert singled out Jenny and Sylvia and told the others to stand and watch. "Your parents haven't paid 1 cent for you. You think I'm a fool?" She ordered them to pull down their underwear in front of everyone. She lifted up their skirts and whipped each of them with a belt. "They just dumped you here because they don't want you." Jenny fell over and begged her to stop, and Sylvia told her that she would take the whipping for Jenny. "Every day your parents don't pay, you will. You hear me?" Sylvia and Jenny learned to stay quiet and out of Mom's way, praying their parents didn't leave them to be abused like this. Life in Mom's house became a battlefield.
Gert's daughter, Paula, found herself following her mother's footsteps, and herself was now pregnant by a man she met in a bar.
Paula had confided in Sylvia that she was pregnant, but quickly regretted telling Sylvia and begged her not to tell anyone. It was this secret that would change Sylvia's life forever. One evening, all the kids were hanging out by the grocery store, and Sylvia noticed Paula was talking to an older boy who was kind of getting rough with her. She ran to her defense and shouted without thinking, "Stop! She's pregnant!" A few of the other kids overheard, and the guy letting her go, saying she better not be. Thinking she was helping out, she could see by Paula's reaction she made a big mistake. Paula pushed past her and told her, "You're going to pay for that."
When Sylvia returned home, the entire clan was waiting for her, with Mom at the helm.
Gertrude told the kids to take Sylvia to the basement. Jenny pleaded for them not to. "I hear you've been spreading lies again." Gert whipped Sylvia, allowing the kids to take turns beating her. They left her in the basement, alone. A week went by, and Sylvia was still in the basement. Gert told the school that she had to be sent to juvie for acting up and being uncontrollable. The local kids would pile in daily, and all played a part in the abuse Sylvia received, from burning her with cigarettes, to beating her with sticks, to kicking her and punching her. Even the youngest was allowed to play a part, and he was only 8 years old. Jenny, scared to even defend or do anything, could do nothing but watch. They were prisoners. Throughout the abuse, Sylvia was starved, and in one instance, when she was so hungry, she had eaten food from the community center that Gert allowed her a tent in order just to keep up appearances in town. But everyone could see how thin she was and how fast she was eating the food, that it was clear that she hadn't eaten for days.
Gert beat Sylvia close to death that night for embarrassing her.
She shattered her teeth with a stick and force-fed her a hot dog,
which Sylvia threw up and then was made to eat her own vomit.
Gert tossed her into the basement to suffer alone once again. Back at school, the rumors were still flying that Paula was pregnant, and Paula was starting to show. She took her humiliation that she was getting from the kids at school out on Sylvia. She told her mother she wanted Sylvia to pay for what she said. Gert went downstairs and with a marker wrote on Sylvia's stomach, "I'm a prostitute and proud of it." She handed the little girl a match and had her light the needle. As all the kids watched, she took the needle and branded Sylvia, carving in the words while she screamed, and the other kids held her down. When Gert was too tired to continue, she told Ricky to finish the job. Sylvia was left with broken teeth, swollen eyes, matted hair, and half unconscious for a week. The door to the basement opened, and Gert had a few of the boys carry her up the stairs and put her in a warm bath. The shock of it was painful, blissful, and soothing at the same time. It was the only comfort she had felt in a very long time. When they were done, they sat her in the chair and made her sign a piece of paper that read, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Lycan, I went with a gang of boys in the middle of the night, and they said that they would pay me if I give them something. So I got in the car, and they all had their way with me. And when they got finished, they beat me up and left sores on my face and all over my body. I have done just about everything that I could to make Gertie mad and cause Gertie more money than she has. I've tore up a new mattress and peed on it. I have also cost Gertie doctor bills that she can't pay and made Gertie a nervous wreck and all her kids."
When Sylvia went to sign the page filled with lies, Gert pulled it away, telling her not to because her handwriting wouldn't be the same. Sylvia started to drift away while they made plans.
Gert had it all planned out. She would say that Sylvia was a runaway and that they were going to jump her somewhere. They could tell that there wasn't much life left in her. She told John Jr. and Jenny that they would be carrying her to the local garbage dump and leaving her there. Being left outside overnight would kill her for sure. Once she was out, then Gert would call the police and report her missing.
Sylvia in that moment stood up,
half conscious, and ran for the door. Gert grabbed her by the back of her hair and sat her in the kitchen. Gert offered her a slice of burnt toast, and Sylvia attempted to eat it, but her throat was swollen from being choked, and her body was riddled with infections that she could barely stay conscious. She dry heaved and said she couldn't swallow. Gert, with no remorse for the girl, rammed her face with a rod from the curtain and ordered the kids to take her back to her kennel. Her daughter Stephanie's boyfriend, Coy, would play a major role in the death of Sylvia. He would deliver her final blows by beating her with a chair. Later that night, Jenny snuck down to help her sister, but was so overwhelmed she didn't know what to do. Sylvia whispered softly, with all that she could muster through her swollen throat, that she knew she was going to die. Jenny went to the bathroom to get some water to wash away some of the blood and vomit that was still in her hair. But when she returned, her sister was dead. The kids tried to wake Sylvia by shaking her. While Gert leaned over her and said that she was faking it, Stephanie screamed, "She's really dead!"
Gert repeatedly said, "No, she isn't. Move out of the way. She's just faking it." When Gert realized what she had done, she went to the payphone across the street, called the police, and told them that Sylvia had run away. When the officers arrived, she handed them the letter. The officers thought that there was something very strange about the letter, but because Gertrude was married to a fellow officer, they gave her the benefit of the doubt, even though there was tension in the air.
When they were just about to leave, they saw little Jenny standing by the door, and Jenny whispered, "Take me out of here, and I'll tell you everything." The officer turned back to look at the house and said he had to question everybody and took Jenny aside in a room that had no door. "They killed her. Look downstairs." The officer went down the dirty staircase, and what he saw horrified him. Everyone in the house was arrested. Gert, Paula, Stephanie, John Jr., Coy, Ricky, Marie.
The officers went around serving arrest warrants
to everyone else who had a hand in the death of Sylvia Likens. Soon everyone was telling the police what they had witnessed.
An autopsy would show that Sylvia had over 100 cigarette burns,
muscular damage, nerve damage, and the cause of death was multiple brain hemorrhages. Sylvia had bitten through her own lip, leaving them attached only by threads of connective tissue. The report also said that her hymen was still intact, making the letter that Gert wrote not even possible, since Sylvia was still a virgin when she died. Betty and Lester Likens were grief-stricken, having no idea this was happening.
All the correspondence from Gert had been positive,
and the children, on their few visits, were too scared to say anything, so how could they know? There was an entire neighborhood aware of the situation, and even when they saw Sylvia wandering the streets with open sores and black eyes, not one person who crossed Sylvia Likens' path stopped to help her. The trial was a shit show, with Paula having to give birth in the middle of it and naming her child Gertrude after her mother. Gertrude tried to claim her age and her mental state was to blame, but when that wasn't working, she flung accusations towards Sylvia being a whore, which from the autopsy would indicate that her story wasn't even plausible. Her daughter Marie, however, cooperated with every single word her mother had said like she was a puppet. She repeated everything Gert said until she finally broke down crying, asking God for forgiveness. It would be her testimony against her mother that sealed everyone's fate. She went into detail of the torture that led to the murder of Sylvia. Gert was found guilty of first-degree murder and received life in prison without parole. She served only 20 years of her life sentence, and Paula only served 9.
The two reunited after prison and went into hiding.
Paula was exposed on Facebook when, after the movie was released, they found out that she was working as a teacher's aide taking care of children. She was fired and went into hiding with her mother, who died of lung cancer shortly after. Stephanie's boyfriend, Coy, who beat Sylvia with a chair, showed no remorse for what he did, and he was found to be a sexual sadist and psychopath and was just waiting for an opportunity to arise. Gert finally took the blame for what she did, but blamed it on drugs and alcohol. Ricky, the boy who carved the words into Sylvia's stomach, died of multiple cancerous tumors at the age of 21. Talk about being cursed. The older kids involved would have a string of bad luck in and out of jails, and the world would hate them, and nothing could or would ever go right for them again. It would appear that everyone involved in murdering Sylvia was cursed by what they did.
Thank you for listening to Monsters and Mothers. Subscribe to hear more chilling accounts of mothers who commit unspeakable horrors.